Welcome to another episode of the Split Screen Podcast with Shah Shahid. I am obviously your host, Shah Shahid, and this episode we'll be comparing the faith-based Hollywood-ish movie, Little Boy, from 2015, directed by Alejandro Monteverde, and its Bollywood remake, Tube Light, in 2017, directed by Kabir Khan. I got back together with Kathy Gibson from accessbollywood.com for this episode, which is actually a follow-up to episode 30 that we also did together, where we actually sat down and to discuss, quote-unquote discuss, the trailers of both these movies, where we actually ended up essentially ripping both movies apart based on their trailers without actually having seen either of the movies beforehand. So this episode that you'll be hearing in a few minutes is actually pretty interesting because we actually walk back a lot of our snap judgments and prejudices and our issues with those movies after the fact. And we also kind of get into this conversation about how aware, if at all, Bollywood really is about the outside perceptions of their own stars and how it factors into their really bad casting choices. Now, before we get to this episode with Kathy, I do need to do some housekeeping. I constantly urge, see beg, everyone to leave me ratings and reviews of the show based on, you know, your likes, your dislikes, and that kind of thing. And I always joke around about the fact that it does kind of, make me feel better about myself as a person. But at the end of the day, it is good to get feedback. It kind of, you know, validates and kind of reaffirms that, hey, people are listening, and it is something good. It kind of boosts your confidence and all that. So with that in mind, I have two reviews from Apple Podcasts today. I have one Canadian, one American, which is, you know, great because that's kind of how my demographic really is, I think. So let's do the Canadian one. This was by Shanaz. She or he, I'm not really sure, this could be a unisex name. I quote, "This is a really fun show to listen to if you're a fan of Hindi and English movies. Shah is an extremely informative, funny, and smart guy. He knows his stuff and knows how to deliver it too. Highly recommend it." So thank you, Shanaz. That was really good. I think I'm going to be high off of this review for a good month. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it. Moving on to the next one. Now, full disclosure, this review is from a former guest, a regular of the show, Miss Alisa Rivera. She's been on the show twice so far, episode 39 and 43. Check those episodes out. She's great. So her review, I'm going to say, does sound a little biased because, again, she does know me personally, but I'm still going to read it nonetheless. I do promise you guys all the time. So her review, and I quote again, "I'm a newcomer to Bollywood and still learning about the industry and the stars. The Hindi film industry puts out more than 1,500 movies each year, so it can be daunting to sort through new releases and figure out what you want to see, not to mention which of the many, bracket many, classic Bolly films to check out online. Host Shah Shahid does a great job of discussing the latest industry news while also throwing a spotlight on classics by comparing Bollywood remakes with the Hollywood films that had inspired them. He balances humor with solid research on the film industry. He also features many guest podcasters, some of them part of the Desi diaspora like himself, others who are not Desi but have a passion for Indian film. This is a must-listen for Bollywood fans everywhere." Excuse me while I melt into a puddle of my own sort of blushy, flustered mess, essentially. Alisa, thank you so much for that. I'm speechless. So without really kind of, again, saying anything else about this, thank you guys. Thank you for everyone who listens, regardless of if you leave a review or not. Like I said, it really kind of helps do this show when you get that validation, when you get that feedback, be it Twitter, be it Facebook, be it in person. So again, thank you guys. And I think that's enough of my flustered nonsense. Without any further ado, let's listen to episode 44 of the Space Skin Podcast with Kathy Gibson from accessbollywood.com. How's it going, Kathy?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Shah?
Great. I think we're both getting over a cold, which is always great.
Pardon me.
There it is. I'll be running. I'll be rocking the mute button a lot today because I'm also getting over a cold from last week. So otherwise, all good. How are things with you?
Things are great. Things are great. Yeah, I am armed here. I've got my cough drops at the ready if things get out of hand,
Things go
but
south, yeah.
yeah, feeling good.
Fair
I'm
enough.
excited to talk about this since we did an entire podcast just about the trailers of two movies. Now to have finally seen them and
Yeah.
see if our fears were confirmed or if things weren't as bad as we thought they were going to be. So I'm eager to hear what you think.
Well, interestingly enough, I think this show is really important because, I mean, if I initially thought that, you know what, if the predictions from episode 30 were right, if the movie turned out to be exactly what we discussed, then there's really no point of doing a follow-up episode because
Yeah.
it's just kind of like, hey, remember episode 30? Yeah, that, all of it happened. And it's like, there's nothing to kind of add to the conversation. But the reason why I want to do this even more so is because I watched both the movies and I definitely will be walking back a lot of my perceptions from the other show.
Yeah.
And I read your review of it, which is on accessbollywood.com for anyone that wants to go read it. And I also kind of felt like you had a similar kind of a reaction to the movie versus our conversation prior to the movie. So yeah, I'm very intrigued to do this.
Yeah. It's I was surprised. I was really surprised on how I felt about both movies. So,
Yes.
yeah, this is it's good. So
Right. You think we should tease this a bit more and drag it out before we actually start talking about it?
no, let's get to it. Let's get to it.
All right, perfect. So, just letting everyone know the obligatory spoiler warning. From here on out, we will be discussing the specific plot details, plot points, including even the climaxes of Little Boy and Tube Light. So be warned, if you haven't seen either of these movies, please skip to the end of the show to get our Twitter and other social media handles, and be sure to subscribe to the show itself. If you don't care, keep listening. And these aren't movies that you really need to know about anyways, going by the box office of Tube Light and the fact that no one's heard of Little Boy prior to these shows that we do. All right, so Kathy, why don't we let's start off with Little Boy, because I mean, otherwise it is a basically straightforward remake,
Right.
with changes here and there for the setting and things like that. So why don't you synopsize Little Boy for us?
So, in short, Little Boy is about a kid in a coastal California town, a 7-year-old boy who's undersized and who hence he gets the nickname Little Boy. Undersized for his age. His dad gets called to go to fight in World War II, fight in the Philippines, and he's taken prisoner, the father is. And it's all about the boy's attempt, his feeling of helplessness that his dad, who's really his only defender, against the bullies in town, that his dad is gone. And so the local priest gives him the task of basically doing fulfilling the Roman Catholic kind of prescription to express your faith through good works, or that's how you deepen your faith. And so gives him the task and has him befriend a local man named Hashimoto, I believe, who has recently been released from a Japanese internment camp in the US. So when it's about how their friendship develops, and in that, the boy's attempt to increase his faith and in his hopes of willing his father to come home. The title, of course, also not only refers to the main character, but is the name of the little boy is the nickname of the bomb that was dropped on, I believe, Hiroshima.
Yes, I believe so
And
too, yeah.
so. It so happens that the town has come to believe that this boy has sort of miraculous powers, believes that he is responsible for dropping the so-named little boy on Japan, ending the war. But it continues on from there. You know, his father isn't able to come home right away. He's presumed dead at one point. And it's about sort of there's a whole bunch of
It's
religious themes in
essentially, yeah,
this.
it's essentially,
Yeah.
faith and, the power it has to literally move mountains, which no one
Yeah.
takes literally except for the little boy himself.
Right.
And I mean, ultimately, it is all set during World War II, I believe.
Yes. I was going to say, isn't that interesting, though, that nobody takes that. So it's based on the parable. There's a couple different references to mustard seeds in the Bible. And this one, the one that it cites here, is about basically you need the. I got my biblical quotes pulled up here. I think it's from Matthew that where I think Jesus says, truly I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you.
Oh, wow.
So like you said, so the boy takes that literally when the priest says it in church. But he happens to be pointing and like doing kind of like, woo, magic hands, yeah, at this mountain that is near the town at the same time that an earthquake happens. And people really do start to believe that this, right, kid has power. You know, like we kind of know, and even the priest knows, who plays the priest?
Tom Wilkinson, I want to say.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the many big names in this movie. The priest and Hashimoto are the only two who really have these conversations about, like, what does this boy really believe? And, you know, Hashimoto wonders, are you undermining his faith in himself if he can't actually, like, voodoo, you know, like, woo, kind of magic hands his father and get him to, like, zap home somehow? But it's interesting that, like, people do start to believe that this kid is magic. Like, the day that the bomb drops, they all run out into town and swarm this kid, and they're like, you did it, little boy, holding up the papers, you know, like, this is like, you know, little boy ends the war or whatever. And, you know, and it's not like, which then segues into like the creepier elements of this movie, which is that everybody's like kind of cool with like hundreds of thousands or millions of Japanese being killed with an atomic bomb, which, you know.
Well, I mean, both the movies have like, I guess, this environment of, you know, the collective people's worst sort of selves coming out during a time of war, where, you know, your hatred, your anger is all directed towards a group of people, which, again, World War II, it was Japanese, you know, even Japanese Americans who were thrown into these internment camps, even though they had nothing to do with it. We get the exact same character played by Chinese actress, I think, right, Juju, in Tube Light, which, again, same thing. She's not. The weird part to me in Tube Light was you could have easily had the character be someone who was not technically Chinese, but North Indian, who shared a lot of sort of like, you know, ancestry, I think, with China. So you could have easily had something like that. I don't understand why they had to go with someone who's specifically Chinese who happened to be living in India. I don't know if that's as common, but that was kind of a minor sort of confusing thing for me.
Yeah, well, yeah, especially when you see that, like, that was one of the big, one of the subplots in Chak Day, India, where you had the two girls from, like, from an area bordering, you know, bordering China, who, you know, are Indian, and about how specifically their team won't really accept them because they don't look Indian enough.
And other people, you get, like, you know, kind of like racist, you know, Chinese slurs against them, even though they're not Chinese, they're Indian. So that's exactly what I thought of, too, when I saw this. I'm like, why didn't you just have these characters be natively Indian but from North India?
Right. Well, and I think... although I did actually like that. And so skipping ahead to Tube Light, you know, where it shifts the action to early 1960s, I believe, during a border skirmish between India and China. Yeah. I actually liked that idea, and especially the way it relates to Little Boy, you know, where America obviously is, you know, has many, many more immigrants from all over the world than India does. India is much more ethnically homogenous. But there are plenty of people who are not ethnically Indian who are Indian. You think of the actress Kalki Ketchlin, who is, in her French parentage.
Fair enough.
But she's, of course, Indian.
Right.
So I kind of like that it's not, you know, you could have done it both ways, but I also kind of like that idea. I think it maybe further emphasized the point that I think Tube Light's very good at making about how you're patriotism shouldn't be dependent on your appearance.
Right.
You know, the way you look doesn't define that. And you see that in the characters in Tube Light who, you know, speak Hindi fluently with local accents. Yeah. It's not, you know, I think with local accents. I can't verify now.
Well, I mean, it's not something that, like, that message that you just mentioned, you know, about you know, how you look. that's never usually kind of a driving home point for most Bollywood movies. Yeah. Whereas that's in, you get that in, you know, it's like a staple of Hollywood films, whereas there's always a message of, it's about what's inside, and you know, stuff like that. But in Bollywood, it's rarely about that. It's always about, yeah, inside matters too, but let's give you a makeover, girl. And yeah, kind of like, okay, sure, yeah, that makes sense. But in terms of, I mean, what I liked... okay, so again, just kind of walking back a little bit. With Little Boy, I know, so our initial reaction to Little Boy was it's overly faithy, it's overly preachy, it's, you know, it was not going to make any sense, it sounds really stupid. But in terms of the movie itself, Kathy, like, I found how they got from A to B, and the characters, there's certain things they put in to explain away, like, again, like, this kid takes everything literally. You've got a priest who's kind of spurring on this fantasy of his.
And he's seven. Let's give him, you know,
right,
like,
right,
you know,
for sure. And he had other things going on in his life too. His dad's gone. His brothers couldn't join the war, which is why the dad had to get drafted.
Right.
Because I guess at the time, someone from the family had to go to war. It was, I guess, a draft, I'm assuming.
I guess so. Yeah.
So the brother couldn't go because he had some sort of physical, you know, restriction that allowed him to get drafted. So the dad had to go, which is why there's this, you know, kind of tension between the two brothers, because, you know, it's because of you that dad left. The brother's now the man of the house, and the brother can't be more than maybe 20 something, I mean, if that.
Yeah, barely.
And so he's got the pressures of running a household, so clearly he's breaking down by it all. And this is at a time when, you know, even at 20, you are the quote unquote man of the house. This isn't today where the, you know, the mom can go out and work. Right. So you've got all these pressures, and this little kid's holding on to the 1 ounce of thing that gets him through the day. And the priest says so as much too. Like, in the scene, the thing I like about Little Boy that Tube Light doesn't have, they try to have, but is that when we're sitting back as the audience going, why is this adult priest just indulging this kid, possibly, you know, emotionally damaging his you know, future? Because what if his dad's dead? You know, then he's going to be like, God hates me or something. Like, you're just kind of wondering, why is the priest doing this? And in the scenes between him and Hashimoto, the priest just says, I'm just keeping him busy till this is over. Like, it's just, I'm not expecting anything to come of any of this. I'm just giving the kid things to do so he's busy and doesn't think about his dad possibly dying.
Not to mention the fact it's keeping him busy, but it's also, it also is kind of providing moral guidance to this kid who let it, yes, he's seven, but my God, the kid in Little Boy is an asshole. I hate that kid. That kid is a jerk. And I don't care that he's bullied. Doesn't give you any excuse for the kind of hatred he has. Well, first of all, I will say that when he gets his comeuppance on his on the bully, which he does at one point, he calls the kid who's is an older kid. He's overweight. Yeah. His mother is dead. He calls him, you fat motherless pig.
Yes.
He goes with the motherless burn on this kid. Like, that's not cool. But not to mention the other. The way that the biggest problem I had with Little Boy is it comes through the way that this kid talks. The little kid says, and I will only say this word once, continuously calls both Hashimoto and any person of Japanese ancestry a Jap.
Yeah.
Over and over, I mean, like, dozens and dozens of times.
Yeah.
Like, this movie is, like, chock full of slurs against Japanese people and, you know, Japanese or Japanese Americans. He continually refers to the guy by that slur.
Yeah.
And it's only finally when Hashimoto says, my name is not J-word.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just thinking, can you think of any movie from the last 10 years that would have been made that would have used the N-word as prolifically as they use the J-word in this movie?
Or rather, in that context, right? Like, it's not meant to be, this isn't, you know, straight out of Compton. This is, you know, this is someone using that as a slur, derogatory.
A white, you know, a town full of white characters using it as a slur.
Yeah.
And especially something set in 1940, we are not talking about, you know, trying to be accurate in terms of depicting...
No, this is not about, this is not a conversation of PC and casual discussion. This is, the word is being used exactly the way that it shouldn't be used ever in that context, in that setting.
And so I think the filmmakers have a real problem with dehumanizing Japanese.
Yeah.
And that again goes to the fact that there's no real reckoning for the fact or for when the bomb is dropped, and there's no real enough that nobody really deals with the fact. Like, Hashimoto himself in the movie doesn't have any kind of reaction. It's not, he's not, you know, he hasn't lived there. He doesn't have any relatives. Yeah. You know, he hasn't lived there for decades, he says. He is American. But God, the humanity of that, going, that you think that there's no reckoning with the fact that how many, you know, thousands and tens of thousands of little kids in Japan were waiting for their dad to come home from war. Yeah. And who, oh, guess what your reward is, that you you die a horrible death.
Hey, but a white kid in California, though, feels really good about himself.
Exactly. Thinks he might be magic. So,
I mean, so, yeah. And I mean, my problem with that is also the fact that when you see the title of the movie, you see that thing about, oh, he's small, so he's a little boy. And then that culminates in the bombing. You're kind of going, okay, so the bombing isn't just something that happens in the movie to kind of resolve everything and create a happy ending. That's where we were going from when the script was written.
Yeah, they wrote backwards from that.
Which is the craziest part, that the whole premise of this film, the title of the movie, the nickname for this kid to be tortured, was leading up to how many people just getting obliterated, and that's supposed, I mean, even today, and the messed up part is, if this movie was a propaganda film that came out in, you know, 1950s or 1960s, you know, celebrating the end of World War II and the, you know, killing of all these people, I would still kind of be like, fine, misdirected as hell, but that's how people were at the time. It's that excuse of, you know, when your grandma says something bad, you're like, okay, she's old. But in this is 2015. Like, I'm pretty sure, and I don't live in America, Kathy, you can kind of maybe give us a perspective. From what I understand, when I hear people talking about World War II, Nagasaki and Hiroshima is always looked back upon with, like, a tinge of regret, if not that, man, like, it was sad that it had to come to that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to tell, you know, from... I don't know what people, I haven't read enough to know what people felt like in the immediate aftermath, you know, what Americans thought of that immediately. I can't imagine being like, hell yeah, and being all psyched about that. You know, it's all horrible. And this then goes to something that I think Tube Light does really, really well.
Yes.
That you have multiple times when one of the commanders of the army says, like, listen, we just want this war to end because we want our boys to come home, and we want the Chinese soldiers to get to go home to their families too.
Yeah.
So there really is, it's such a different feeling where it, you know, it really is just like war is bad in Tube Light. Everybody wants it to be over for its own sake, and not, you know, and that everybody deserves a chance to move on with their lives. And you don't get that in Little Boy.
I mean, To be devil's advocate, pun intended, for a little boy, the setting of the war is a little different, where I can understand the different reactions. Tube Light was shown as a border skirmish that happened over a couple of months, it feels like, in the movie.
Yeah.
Whereas at the time that Little Boy is happening, that's a war that's been raging for how long? Pearl Harbor had just happened, I think. There is a character in the movie whose son died at Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
So I feel like it is a different... I mean, again, I think in that situation, like, for example, even the kid. I think the kid was born, you know, in a climate where everyone hated Japanese people. You know?
Right.
So it's kind of like he doesn't really understand anything other than this environment that he's been living in. So, again, I don't want to defend a little boy, but there we are.
No, it is true. And it's I think then it speaks to... Yeah, and by this point, you know, historically... By the time the bombs were dropped on Japan, I think things were already over in Europe. Germany had already surrendered. So this was like, we just need to wrap this up and get done with it, I think was the thinking, probably. And so I think the way that that Tube Light improves on this, and overall, I think Tube Light is a, I will say generally speaking, having seen Tube Light twice now, I really kind of like Tube Light. Like, I'm surprised at how much I enjoyed it the second time I watched it.
Yeah.
Because they really do a lot of things better. And you know, the big... So, in Little Boy, the kid who hates Japanese people sees this Japanese looking man drive into town, immediately runs to tell his brother that we were being invaded by this one guy. The way that Tube Light, by this one old man. And so the way that Tube Light gets around it really creatively is that, so Salman plays, you know, just in the setup that you know, things are happening in India now. And Salman plays the character of the 7-year-old kid, mm-hmm. except he's, you know, like 50 or whatever he is mm-hmm. supposed to be in the movie. Mm-hmm. But he's I don't know, I guess you would term him slow. I don't know if that's politically correct or not, but he's not.
I feel like they never, that's one of my biggest problems with Tube Light, that they never, they kind of just gloss over that.
So he's like got a joke. He's got a low IQ. He's not somebody who's going to be independent necessarily
as an
adult.
Clearly he's clearly emotionally or developmentally challenged,
right.
Let's say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it's his little brother, or his younger brother, played by Sohail Khan, Salman's real brother. Yeah. Who has to then go to war and leaves him. And so Salman's character wants to fight as well. But of course, Sohail is, you know, standing behind him is the army sergeant, you know, the army officers trying to delicately explain, like, no, you are not going. Sohail comes up with the idea that we need you, Salman, to be the man here in town just in case any Chinese soldiers come over the border. It's your job to alert everybody. And so that, I think, is makes it really clever for then when he sees this little little kid, Guo, and his mother, who's played by Juju, when they drive into town, it's because Salman runs into town and tells everybody, the Chinese are here, the Chinese are here.
It's his job,
It's because it's his job. Not because he hates Chinese people, but because he thinks he's doing his duty.
That's what he's supposed to do, for sure.
So I like that. I think that's it feels much better watching that than it does watching Little Boy.
My biggest takeaway from both these movies is that, and again, and for this reason, I will never doubt Kabir Khan going forward in anything he does, simply because Tube Light takes Little Boy and the adaptation itself, so the things it changes to set into the context of the story that Tube Light is telling, is amazing. And you and I do have problems with, you know, some of the things that happen, some of the acting, some of the performances, some of the plot holes, but
some of the dancing.
Well, I there's a whole debate about if music in Bollywood movies is canon or not to the story. But
the music was not my problem. It was Sohail and Salman's stiff arm movements and lack of fluidity that did me in. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
you didn't like the close brotherhood, you know, undershirt bonding, which I think Aaron Fraser from Bollywood Is for Lovers compares that to the creepiness from Parinda between Anil Kapoor and Jackie Shroff. There's a dance sequence where they dress up as like babies, and it's weird. So my thing is the thing you mentioned, how they take certain plot points from Little Boy and make them make sense in Tube Light.
Yeah.
And my the biggest thing for that to me is the premise. We were talking about in the trailer show in episode 30 about how in Little Boy, the premise is built on a sort of religious, you know, faith-based kind of a concept. And in Tube Light, they replaced that with a nationalism sort of pride that, you know, war and, you know, India. But that's really not what it is in Tube Light. Like, we were gravely mistaken.
Right.
Because as the priest in Little Boy gives the boy these tenets of, I guess, Christianity? Again, I'm assuming.
It's specifically, okay. So unlike, I will, little side note here.
Yeah, no.
This is a different kind of movie than, like, the evangelical faith-based films like that Kirk Cameron makes. Mm-hmm. This is like specifically Roman Catholic.
Okay.
And so that's where a lot of the faith versus faith through works kind of stuff comes through. There's like a whole lot of like doctrinal debates over basically whether or not you get into heaven just by being baptized, or you have to actually do shit that shows that you work.
Okay. And that's what the tenets are, that, you know, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and shelter the homeless.
Exactly. Okay. That it's basically you have to you know, these are all things that Jesus did, and you have to do them, you know, or act similarly. Like, there's, oh, I got another good quote. Here you go. Bible time. Busting out my religion major.
This is the first for
many
us.
Many years after the fact. It was, let's see. I think this is, I can't remember who's saying this. This is from James, anyway, for anybody who wants to look it up. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warm and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also by faith itself, if it does not have works, is dead. So basically, you can't, if I'm like, Shah, I'm hungry, you're like, and you're like, good luck with that. I hope you find something to eat. And don't give me something
God,
to eat.
God bless you. I hope, yeah.
Yeah.
I hope you get, something happens.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're not holding up your end of the bargain.
Damn it. I've been doing it wrong all these years.
I know. I'll give you my address after this. You can send me in the mail. Yeah. So.
I'll mail you a Big Mac.
Yeah, exactly. Mail me some Tim Hortons. I don't have any around.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of where that's coming from. And so it's a little kind of, although it would be easy to mistake the two because this movie employs a lot of the same is made in the same way as a lot of those films where basically you hire in a bunch of actors. You get like 2 days with Tom Wilkinson as the priest and it's like film whatever you can. And then his character's like, by the way, I'm going to be gone for like 2 weeks.
I'm going to be gone for the next two acts.
And that's how you explain, like, we could only afford Tom Wilkinson for 2 days.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and which is, again, another one of the big problems between the two movies is that Michael Rapaport plays the dad in the first in the first one, who's in, like he's in, like, a couple scenes in town, a couple scenes where he's fighting in the Philippines, or just, like, a couple shots.
Yeah.
And then, like, a couple scenes where he's in a prisoner of war camp. And, like, that's it. You know that it had to only take, like, two, three, four days to film all that stuff. Whereas the cool stuff in Tube Light, you get a lot of, like, paralleling of stuff that's happening.
Yes.
While Sohail fights on the front and Salman is struggling back at home, there's a whole song that is just, like, cutting back and forth between
really
the two
good.
Of them. It's totally good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's the slight difference between the typical evangelical Kirk Cameron Saves Christmas
of... And I mean, just going back to, like, again, like, the Tenets versus what they did in Tube Light. Not knowing anything about, you know, Roman Catholicism or anything else, I just thought that stuff that the little boy got to do as a list were pretty vague and, like, not at all, like, giving any direction, really. It was more of, like, feed the hungry. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Like, do I just give someone a donut? Like, I don't... You know, and then there's, like, you know, shelter the homeless, and it's kind of like, he had to interpret a lot of those things, you know, into, like, I guess this might work kind of a thing. Whereas I love the adaptation to Tube Light, where it's like, you know, you got to have faith, you got to have patience, you got to believe. And in the meantime, while you're believing, follow the teachings of Gandhi. And it's like, well, who's Gandhi? And then he gets into this whole history lesson, which I thought was the coolest thing, because it's not just, here's a list, do it. It's more of like, no, this was who Gandhi was. This is what he said to do. And it relates because Gandhi stopped war during the partition based on his beliefs. So it's like, hey, you want to stop this war? Maybe you should try doing what this other guy did.
And Om Puri, who plays the, like, basically the equivalent
the Tom
of
Wilkinson.
The priest. Yeah, the Tom Wilkinson character, says that it wasn't that Gandhi didn't have these magical powers.
Yes.
It was that his belief in the power of his words and his conviction is what convinced other people.
Yeah.
And that's how he relates it to, like, that's how you, you know, quote, move mountains, is by just convincing people that you believe so hard. And that what you believe in is right. And it makes you wonder, like, what would little boy have been different had there been a parallel storyline about his dad being a prisoner of war, and as the boy is befriending Hashimoto, that it's, you know, if the dad were able to somehow strike up some kind of amicable relationship with one of his guards, and in that, you know, that final moment where there's a shootout in the camp and the dad tries to escape, you know, what if he had formed a bond with the guard and the guard's like, I'm letting you go. Run
right,
for
right.
it now. Go home to your son. Like,
oh my God.
Wouldn't that have been better? Then you avoid all those problems, I think.
You're writing a better movie here than they did.
That's right.
Kabir Khan, call us.
Call us. Well, here's my other big picture question, too. Because the one, I think that it's really smart to go with more of like a secular, like you said, secular nationalist kind of code of ethics.
Well, it would have been easier, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, well, and that's what we were kind of deriding on the other show. We were just like, yeah. Oh, this is just going to be all about India, woo. But it's not.
No, and so I like that, and I think it's smarter because one of the issues I had with Little Boy, I don't know if you felt the same way, is so where does the boy think his power derives from? Because it doesn't really spell it out. Like, does he think it's God? Does he think it's himself? Does he think it's some kind of magic? Because he loves this like comic book magician.
Yeah.
And if it isn't explicitly about the boy coming to believe that like God is acting through him, is that a failure of the movie based on its own terms? If you see where I'm going, you know, if you're, the point is to make this movie about, you know, faith-based, you know, Christianity, like if the kid doesn't get that that's what's happening, you know, or do we just excuse it because he's seven, or does it have to explicitly say like, God, you brought home my dad, thank you?
So, I mean, I guess my reaction to that would be in how both these movies are made. Little Boy, I feel, doesn't care about the little boy.
Ooh.
Or like his journey. Yeah. I don't feel like there's any sort of growth to this character, because even by the end of the movie, you don't feel like, oh, so now that he is friends with Hashimoto, his outlook on his dad fighting Japanese people are different, or it's now he kind of understands the nuances of war. I don't get that by the end of Little Boy. Whereas there's a great scene in Tube Light where, you know, you realize that Salman starts off with, you know, oh my God, the Chinese are here, the Chinese are taking over. He becomes friends, and throughout the movie, he's oblivious to the fact that people don't like this kid he's friends with. Like, there's a great scene in the army garrison where Yashpal Sharma, he's the army guy, you know, that's dealing with, you know, he's the one that told him we can't take you in the army. His relationship is with Salman Khan's character throughout the movie. When he shows up, there's a great scene where, you know, bodies from the front are coming in, and Salman loses his crap. It was a really, I mean, awkward slash heartwarming scene where Salman's afraid to find out if his brother's in one of these bodies. And, you know, the army commander, Yashpal Sharma's character, kind of, you know, consoles him and says, no, he's not here. But at the same time, you see people all over the place crying, breaking down over their loved ones who died at the border skirmish at the hands of Chinese soldiers. And he tells Salman's character to take your friend away from here. That little kid, that Chinese little kid who's standing in that corner, you need to get him out of here because the atmosphere isn't that great. And there's a real sense of the fact that Salman doesn't understand that. That his character doesn't get why people hate Chinese people. And by the end of the movie, he stands up for the kid, too. Like, physically, violently, he gets upset that someone hurt, you know, the Chinese guy's family.
Yeah.
So there is growth in his character and his perception of what's happening around him. Little Boy, I don't see that happening. So to answer your question, I don't think anyone that made Little Boy cares about what the little boy is going through. Whereas Tube Light is very much concerned with Salman's understanding, his journey of understanding what's happening to him in his limited capacity. Which is why I can even excuse the fact that Salman's developmentally challenged, because that's...
Yeah.
The journey that this guy who doesn't understand has to understand what's happening.
Right, exactly. And that scene is fantastic. I love that scene. And that goes back to something early in the movie, too, where there's a scene between Sohail and Om Puri where they're having a discussion as Salman is getting all excited, you know, the soldiers are here. And they have this very serious sidebar discussion about what happens. You know, where Sohail's worried about what happens to Salman if I'm not around. And Om's like, no, you need to be thinking even bigger. What happens when I'm not around? You're probably going to come back from this war. It's not going to be a problem. He needs to be able to be okay by himself.
And so
developing those, that kind of understanding, and also developing that friendship with the family, with Guo's family, is important too, because it's expanding his network and also just giving him a greater understanding about how to function in the world.
And that's the other thing too, and that's one of the crucial kind of differences of this movie too, and I forgot to mention this earlier, is that in Little Boy, the father going to war is something that has to happen. It's not a choice. It's, you know, the older brother was supposed to go when he became of age. he didn't, so now the dad has to go. It's out of everyone's hands. Even the kid doesn't understand why this is happening. Whereas in Two Blade, it's a different story. Sohail Khan's choice to go to war is more practical. It is because Ompuri's character tells him that, listen, you don't have a job, you're trying to support your brother, your parents are no longer around, I can't keep paying you crappy money, I'm old, I'm going to die at one point. What are you going to do for income to support your brother and yourself in the future? Go to the army, the border thing is going to last a couple of months at the most, then you'll get a pension, you'll have some steady income, you can support your family. And that's why he doesn't want to leave his brother, but he decides to do it for practical reasons. And Samad's character isn't upset by this decision. He's excited. He wants to go to war too.
Yeah.
Because, again, as a little kid, you that's what you like. You know, boys want to play soldier, and you know, cowboys and Indians.
Yeah.
Not comparing the racial craziness of that statement as well. But but that's the thing. So throughout the story, there is a, like, you know, when Salman comes to realize that, oh, this is war, like, his excitement quickly turns to grave concern for his brother.
Yeah.
We don't get that in Little Boy. There is no, again, like, I go back to the fact that Little Boy has no arc from, you know, beginning to end. He's just like, these people are bad. My dad's going to war. I hate everyone. This is what I got to do to get him back. Oh, he's back. Great. I was successful. Yeah. And it's like, hold up. Like, not, you learn nothing.
Right.
So I did like that as well. And that's what I mean. That's what I mean, that Kabir Khan is really good at adapting Little Boy. And that's what we were shitting on in the other show, too. We're like, why would anyone adapt this story into a Bollywood movie? And the way he did it is, I think, flawless. I mean, everything made sense. Everything had a reason. Even, you know, the bullies in Tube Light made sense. You kind of felt like everyone had a reason to hate. Like, for example, that character in Little Boy, with the father whose son died in Pearl Harbor, came off very shticky, came off very 2D.
Yeah.
Whereas these little people in a town who's... And that scene, again, when people are coming, the bodies are coming home, you feel that, oh my God, like, these guys are just as impacted as everybody else on the other side.
And not to mention having the bully... Having adults be the main characters in Two Blade does make a difference, because having the bully being someone who has grown up picking on Salman, but also being somebody who... he's the one who doesn't qualify for war, you know, to fight because he's got knocked knees, I think.
Yeah.
And so his own feeling of, you know, impotence and being less, he can't be the hero. So instead he's like, well, I still got this guy to pick on.
Yeah.
Mohammed Zishan Ayub, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right.
That was good.
Thank you. That guy's great. He's the bully in this. I love him in everything. He's like one of the actors where whenever I see him on screen, I'm like, oh, okay, everything is going to be okay in this scene. He will, you know, focus on him. He's fantastic. And he's really, really good in Tube Light. And, but I think it does make a difference having those adult characters. So like you said, they can grow, they have understandable motivations. It's God, I'm just amazed by how much more I like that movie. I mean, it's, and I pick on the dancing. Mostly it's the Sohail Saman dance. Cause I really did like, the radio song, especially because Jushu dances in it, which was cool.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, overall, I mean, it really is like a very nice Bollywood adaptation with some with some decent war sequences too, by the way.
So, okay, so we spent majority of this episode talking about why bottom line, let's go ahead and just call it. I think Tube Light is a much better movie than Little Boy.
Yes.
Do you agree?
Definitely.
Perfect. Now, I want to change gears a little bit. I want to talk about why, because Tube Light did horribly at the box office. Can you can you confirm that for me? Because again, like I said, you're the box office lady.
So. I can, and I don't have the exact figures for India.
No, that's fine.
And it's, I think it, what really hurt it, there were a couple things that hurt it. One of them was the precedent that Salman had set in recent years, because it's like, I didn't, you know, I came to Bollywood in the mid-2000s, which was when Salman was doing crap films. He wasn't doing anything. Yeah, yeah. That was the lowest point of his career.
Yeah.
And so he's been, you know, it's been building back up since then. And you're talking about, he's coming off of having, like, you know, some of the highest grossing movies, at least here in the U.S., of any Hindi films, with, like, you know, Bajrangi Bhaijaan is right up there, you know, right behind PK. That earned over $8 million here. Sultan,
same director, by the way.
Yeah, Sultan, just last year made over $6 million. You know, Prem Ratan Dhan Payo made 4.5. So then here in the U.S. and Canada, Tubal 8 made $1.5 million. So it's a huge fall. Mm. I mean, even though it's still going to be like in probably in the top 10 movies of the year, it's still, it was, so a lot of it was relative to the other, you know, to how he had been performing. Mm-hmm. And because he had had such a hot streak, I think in India, you had a lot of people who paid a lot of money to be able to distribute it and a lot of theater owners. So even though it made more than it cost. Let's put it that way. I think it made back its budget. However, so many people lost money. So many distributors lost money. I believe Salman paid them back from his own funds.
Yeah.
Because, you know, all that stuff. And not to mention, I don't know how satellite rights and all the other stuff fit into it. But it was, I think, I don't know if it, because of all the people that had to be paid back, it may have actually lost money. I'm not positive on that, though. But a lot of it, yeah, like I said, was just relative.
The vibe I got was that it underperformed. Now, either definitely. For a movie itself or a Salman Khan movie itself, it definitely did underperform. It didn't live up to expectations, you know, box office-wise. But since we're talking about, you know, we just spent a lot of time talking about the movie, why do you think that is? Like, what do you think in the movie itself, in the content, didn't resonate with audiences?
I wonder if it has to do with how audiences want to see certain characters. And I go back to something that Bobby Deol said about Dharmendra, that Dharmendra had made some movie years ago, and I don't know what it is, where he had to play two characters, and one of them was a brother. I think they were like, I don't know if they were separated twins, but one of them was physically weak. Mm-hmm. And audiences were pissed off and hated the movie and were mad because they said, we don't want to see you that way. You can't be weak. And I wonder if that's part of it with this character, seeing Salman be, I don't, you know, not, having deficiencies, you know, his typical deficiency in movies recently is that he doesn't have a girlfriend. Like, they're like, oh, you're 35 and you're still single. And so this was like different, where like there was going to be no romance for him.
Yeah.
There was not, you know, and so I wonder if that was, if it was just pushing things too far. And I also wonder when they decided to make it. It is funny how this fits into a lot of the way that Salman is talked about by his family and friends and people who defend him. Mm. You know how they always talk about him where when he said, especially
he's
after
just the a little boy.
Yeah, this is a child. Like, he's 50. He could be a grandpa. But he always gets talked about. Like, oh, he's a child. He's so innocent. And I wonder if this was made to capitalize on that, but it was a miscalculation because everybody's like, no, I kind of want, like, macho fighting Salman.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, so I have a few theories about... Okay. So despite me personally liking Tubal 8 a lot better than Little Boy, and I even forget the comparison to Little Boy, Tubal 8 on its own, I think... I mean, story-wise, I think it's very well written. I think it's very well performed by everybody in the cast.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with this movie is Salman Khan himself. Ooh. And here's the thing, not his performance,
okay,
but the fact that Salman Khan is in this role. Because any issues you have with Tubal 8 all comes back to that. I think it all comes back to casting this 50-plus-year-old man in this role in a physically, emotionally imposing way that doesn't gel with anything. Because the thing is, when you look back at Little Boy, when we talked about all this little kid's life, he lost his dad, his bigger brother's absent, his mom is being wooed by the father of the bully that's torturing him,
played by Kevin James.
So you have all these reasons for this kid to kind of, you know, be completely lost. And then you introduce a Japanese character who is essentially acting as a proxy father figure. Their conversations is very much... conversation you would have with an older man when you're a young kid, you know, what is this world? I am not a Jap. My name is so-and-so. You know, go get ice cream for me because I can't get it myself because everyone hates me. Why do people hate you? Like, there's these conversations they're having that should explain to the kid, you know, the realities of life.
Yeah.
You don't get that in Little Boy because Salman, as an emotionally stunted 50-plus-year-old man, befriends a literal little boy.
Yeah.
And I guess his mom, played by Juju, is supposed to fill in that, older person relationship. But the weird part of the movie is, A, she is younger than Salman.
Right.
So you never get that dynamic of a mother and son, which would have made Two Blood so much better. Because they're orphans. Him and Sohail Khan are orphans in the movie.
That's really interesting.
Because of the casting of Juju, who is this younger actress, Salman's a 50-something-year-old man, even though she's a mom to his friend, that's where you would think it would go. But because it's Salman in the role, you can't see that. You don't see that, oh, this person's being like a mom or like a nurturing mother figure to him, because it's absolutely atrocious when you see them in the same frame together.
Right. Well, and she's not cast as like frumpy mom. Like, she's gorgeous. She's a beautiful actress. And in any other movie, it's Salman wooing her.
And that's the other thing, too. Yeah. I feel like the way this movie was marketed, too, you've got, you know, pictures of them behind the scenes being promoted everywhere that, you know, Chinese actors, Juju with Salman Khan. So when you finally watch the story, I think people were expecting that, oh, Salman's so badass, he's going to romance an Asian actress now.
Yeah.
But you get to the movie and you're like, are they going to get, like, this is weird.
Yeah.
But is this a romance? Is this going to become a romance? All those scenes to me, I was watching with like kind of anticipated cringe. Like, what is happening? Like, is he going to get a crush on her? Like, this is just all so weird.
Yeah.
And even stepping back and looking at it, you're like, oh, she was there for wisdom, like Hashimoto in Little Boy. But it just doesn't convey, because he's 50-something, massively hulking, and there's this mom who's trying to talk to him like he's a kid.
Yeah.
But you're like, it's not gelling, because it's not making sense to me.
So that's a great point. And there's two things that I have to remind myself that I need to say. First of all, it would have logically not made sense, it still would have been, you know, we're so used to accepting Salman as playing younger than he is, that even if you had cast like Michelle Yeoh or something like that, like some another actress.
Oh my God, who's how like, awesome would that have been?
Yeah. Even if she's around the same age as him, you still would have like understood oh, she's the mom.
Fair.
He's her, you know, she's playing mom to him. Even if in reality they could be married.
But that's the thing too, right? I feel like you cast someone like Michelle Yeoh or even Juju here because you want to fill out that, well, we don't have a major leading actress. We got to put in a conventionally beautiful actress. But like, my thing is, why not cast someone, you know, in the presence of like a Kieran Kerr character?
Yeah.
Actress. You know, totally. Someone who is a mom character, not a hot, like, not a MILF character, you know what I mean?
What?
Like, not that kind of a thing, but, like, someone who conveys to Salman that, hey, I could be your mom.
Because especially since the whole point in Tube Light is that Guo, the little boy, lives with his mom, and they're waiting for her dad to be released from prison. And so why couldn't he have been raised by his grandparents and was with his grandmother waiting for her husband to be released?
It works, right? I mean, and this kind of thing. Like, any complaint I have about Two Blade always kind of circles back to, well, it's Salman Khan. That's why this is weird. Because, like, for example, the scene in Little Boy where the Japanese guy goes to Little Boy, hey, you go get an ice cream for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not, I won't be served.
Mm-hmm.
That exact same scene. And that's funny because he takes his ice cream when he doesn't get one of his own. Because it's like, well, I can't go in there. You can get ice cream whenever you want. I'm the one they're being racist towards. In Little Boy, that exact scene doesn't work, because the way that plays out is Salman goes, you go get ice cream, Chinese boy that everyone hates. And when everyone finds out that, oh, why is this Chinese boy here? Salman runs away.
Yeah, I know.
And you're kind of like, wait a minute, you just abandoned a Chinese kid in a village where they hate Chinese people.
Right.
Why? That's not funny. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Like, what is gonna... Like, that was me doing Two Blood. Whenever these scenes happen, I was so scared of the Chinese kid. Because I'm like, is this movie going to take a terribly dark turn where something happens to this kid? Like, and especially, that's the weird part.
And especially since, again, Om Puri, who they don't feel like paying or whatever, was like, I'm going to be gone. See you later. I'm the only one who will stick up for the Chinese Indian kid. But I'm leaving now. I'm leaving Salman in charge.
I also want to mention something that you mentioned in your Jirwa 2 review, where Bollywood, I feel like, is very unaware of the reality of characters they cast.
Yes.
Like,
you're going where I think you're going.
Yeah, no.
Another point I wanted to make.
I'm exactly going there, because I cannot, like, I don't care how emotionally developmentally challenged you are. If you're 200-something pounds at some point in your life, you realize you're 200 and something pounds and that you're stronger than most people. Just like we talked about this in Bang Bang. When you look like Katrina Kaif, I don't care where you're born and brought up, at some point in your life, you're clued into the fact that you're gorgeous.
Yes. You can't look like you work out for 4 hours a day and like all you drink is protein shakes and have people be like, oh, but I'm so simple, or like I'm Varun, like, oh, I'm just a nerd and I got beat up and they took my clothes off. F that, no way. You just, like, nobody's buying it. So is that a problem with how, with these standards that Bollywood actors have for themselves now? Because they all have the same frickin' body.
Yeah.
Like, it's when you look at Shahid Kapoor and he looks svelte and trim, even though dude is jacked.
Yeah.
But just because he's not like 50 pounds heavier the way that like Saif and Salman and Hrithik and Varun and all these other guys are, and occasionally Deepika's boyfriend, like
Ranveer.
Yeah, Ranveer. Like there's none of this adjusting your body. Like Amir's the only one who's willing to make any adjustments for his body. And I'm not even talking extreme adjustments. I'm just talking like cut back on the protein shakes for a couple months so that you could play an accountant.
Get the flab. Yeah, like Matt Damon does this all the time where he's a ripped guy. I mean, not he's in shape, but when he's doing a Suburbicon or when you're doing The Informant, he'll get that gut going just because that's what informs the character.
You shouldn't, it shouldn't be rare that, like, somebody goes the opposite direction where it's like, you know, our beloved Randy, like, losing weight for a role, or Amir getting paunchy. It's always, like, these stories about, oh, you know, Shah Rukh got so cut for this role. Like, I don't even care at this point. I'm over it.
And also, where does that stop impressing us? Because it's like, that is your job, though.
Yeah.
Like, no one's going to come up to me and be like, hey, last week you came in 9 to 5 every day, man. Kudos. Like, here's no, that's my job, though. Like, you're literally getting paid millions of dollars. And again, I understand the hardships that come with being someone in the public eye. I'm not discounting any of that. I'm just saying, if someone paid me millions of dollars to work out 4 hours a day, enough money that I could hire a team of people to watch my diet, watch my clothes, watch every aspect of my life, that would be an expectation. That wouldn't be a privilege. That would be something that I'm expected to do.
Directors build that into the schedule where they're like, we're going to need you to do like an hour of weight training so that you look pumped when you take off your shirt for the next scene.
Right.
Like, that's like a given. And
well, so you've got guys like, I mean, I don't want to spend too long on this tangent that I'm going to bring up right now. But you've got guys like Vidyut who will be working out on set literally 30 seconds before a shot. And Hollywood guys do this all the time. There's literally a gym beside the set because they got to do like run a lap before they take a scene because they got to look red and like pumped up.
Well, and Vidyut is, I'm sorry, I'm thinking about Vidyut.
Kathy, I told you I don't want to spend too long on this.
I can't help it.
We've lost Kathy, guys. So anyways, let's wrap this up.
But he's the exception, right? Like, he's like one, he and Tiger are like the only two like martial artists. I know like a lot of other guys like
Dan. No. See, I feel like I do this a lot with you, but I gotta stick up for Akshay Kumar again. Because he was the original martial artist.
I forgot. By the way, I forgot about Akshay. Akshay is the perfect case in point. Akshay is like the same age as all these other guys. He looks good. He looks good. He's got a great body, but he is not like jacked. He doesn't look roided up. Yeah. I'm tired of the roided up look. Yeah. I'm okay if Akshay looks like a guy around 50 who, you know, works out, is in shape, and just has a nice body.
And you know what, too? And to bring this back to what we were talking about with Cassio Salman here, you got to wonder, right? Is that why Akshay's movies are so much more successful no matter what he does? Because he does the man on the street stuff. He does the stuff where he's playing a lower than middle class actor, sort of character, who's fighting for the little guy, either physically in a gubber sort of a role, or, you know, like a Jolly LLB type of role where he's, you know, fighting intellectually or fighting, you know, with his brawn versus brain. Like, all his movies are always so successful because he looks like a 50-something year old guy that anyone in India or outside can relate to. I can't relate to a 280-pound Salman Khan who's developmentally challenged in a small town where he clearly looks like he's a Bollywood superstar.
Exactly. Perfect. That's exactly my feelings. And Like, that's what Akshay is great about. He can play diverse characters because he's not stuck in having to be Akshay Kumar, in quotes. Also, side note, by the way, I don't know if you've seen Ittefaq, but I'm going to go with Akshay Khanna with one of the best bodies in Bollywood right now. That guy, like, fills out a set of clothes. Oh, my God. He looks awesome.
That like, literally came out of nowhere. Respond to that. Akshay Khanna. I thought you were going to comment on his acting. I'm like, his body? Where did that come from?
You got to see him, though. He looks like, he's all like, you know, he's got a button-up shirt all tucked in. He looks like he's fit.
You guys can't see this, but she's literally acting out how he fills up a shirt.
It's disturbing that since I saw that movie, I'm like, the next time I have a podcast, next time Shah has me on, I'm going to talk about how hot Akshay Khanna is.
I feel like we need to have a separate show of just random moments Kathy wants to verbalize on a podcast.
This is embarrassing.
Oh my God. Okay, cool. Okay, no, so that's fine. So I wanted to ask you, because again, I have a lot of thoughts about this. Would this movie have been better if it wasn't Salman Khan because of all the reasons we just mentioned? Better from a critical perspective. Like, let's not talk about box office because there's a lot of other factors involved in that. But from a critical perspective, do you think it would have been more accepted by audiences, I guess, therefore more box office, if it wasn't a Salman Khan movie, if it wasn't marketed like a Salman Khan movie, if Sohail Khan wasn't stunt casted as his brother in the movie, you know, in the character and he's playing his real-life brother?
I think maybe. I'm trying to think of who I would have cast instead of Salman, and I can't think of anybody off the top of my head.
I have so many people.
Ooh, okay, go for it. Yeah, but I think you're onto something.
But I mean, and then just completely going based on, I feel like, first of all, like I said, Kabir Khan, I'm never going to question him after this movie because I was so negative going into this movie, I came out of it completely like turned around. But I just feel like if this was a smaller movie, if this wasn't marketed as a Salman Khan movie, if you didn't have the stunt casting of the two brothers playing two brothers, I think anyone like Rajkumar Rao, I could see him being a convincing, developmentally challenged 30-something-year-old guy.
Yeah.
And you pair him across, you know, Juju, you've got that, you know, dynamic of Indian guy, Asian actress, you know, who can definitely seem maternal. Because Rajkumar Rao, even though he's 30-something, if he was playing this kind of a role, would seem a lot younger. Like, he would come off as a lot, kind of a kiddie kind of character. Even someone like, you want to try to sell this movie based on commercial appeal, and you don't want to get someone like Rajkumar Rao, get a Sushant Singh Rajput.
Yeah.
I don't want to speak towards his range to do something like this, but definitely I think he'd be able to do it more convincingly than Salman.
I think so. I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the age really is the biggest factor, especially if you're going to cast a young, attractive Chinese actress, which they did in the hopes of, you know, because I think there was some Chinese financing behind the movie, which made it even funnier when, as they started going along, I think it was that the company or her agency or whoever, somebody decided, we're not sure if China's going to be fairly portrayed in this movie. And that was why she didn't come promote in China. Mm. As far as I know, they said it was a schedule conflict, but then the movie tanks. And they said it was a scheduling conflict, and she's like, oh, well, I'll come there after it's opened to promote. And then the movie tanks, and she's like, I'm not coming over there. This movie's bombing, so I'm not going to do me any good.
To its benefit, that might also be one of the reasons why we like the portrayal of the other side so much better in Two Blade than Little Boy, because there was either financiers or there was an actress involved who was of that ethnicity, so they're not going to, you know, throw her under the bus.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I don't, I mean, I feel like I'm hoping this is kind of like a wake-up call to Salman.
Yeah.
I feel like we say that a lot with each of his movies. Yeah. Like, I think I said the same thing with Sultan, when I'm like, I hope this is a wake-up call. I hope he does more physically derogative, like, you know, challenging roles like this. But I just feel like because this was kind of a fall from grace after, like you said, a high of successful films.
Yeah,
I hope he realizes that there's things you can't do unless you're willing to commit to that. No one's saying you should be Amir Khan. No one's saying you got to be a Christian Bale. But no one's saying you got to be Randeep Hooda. But you can't. And again, for me, that was it. For me, it wasn't even about like. I think even Akshay Kumar would be more believable in this role than him, just because I can't believe that a guy this old, that's that massive, like has such imposing screen presence, I don't see you as an underdog, not in this capacity anyways. I don't see you getting beat up by, you know, contemporaries in the village. I don't see you getting I don't see
those Mohammed Zishan Ayoub is not going to kick your ass. No. I'm not buying it.
Because again, at one point you got to, and the thing is, we see this trope in Hollywood a lot. You know, I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones kind of girl, but Hodor is a massive, huge, developmentally challenged character. But the thing is, people around him are aware that he's massive and use him to that advantage.
Yeah.
And even Little Boy had a character like that, where there's, you know, the mechanic that worked in his dad's shop was a guy that was massive and he was slow. And you got to kind of wonder if Kabir Khan looked at that character and goes, that's my hero.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but even that guy was used for his physical traits, if not his intellect. And that's always the case, though, right? You have massive guys who are intellectually not as developed. They're used, they're exploited even, or taken advantage of their physical traits. So that's what is really hard for me to believe in Two Blade. That how is this guy getting physically bullied and intimidated by people that are like a third of his size?
Yeah,
I can't take that.
Yeah, that is a great point. It's frustrating because it's a movie that's close to being, you know. I mean, I enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed it. It's
not here.
It's not necessarily the right movie for Salman Khan, and yet it is like one of my favorite Salman movies, which is not saying a whole lot for. I guess this is, again, I'm coming to this not having seen him in his heyday, and, like, you know, Dabang is my favorite, but, I don't know, it comes close, it is really tough, but it is, like you said, it's good to direct things going forward that, you know, you aren't a child, you are a man, you are on the verge of joining the AARP, you are going to be a senior citizen sooner than sooner than later.
I would start love to see him. I would love to see him play a dad to a kid that's older than an infant in a movie. Just give me some dynamics of you being a dad with like an older kid. Like, I mean, like you look at movies. Like, I forget what movie it was, but we had an actor who had a teenage daughter. All these guys have teenage daughters except Salman. Let me see you play, Drisham, it was, with Ajay Devgan.
Oh, yeah.
Where he had a teenage, you know, marriable age daughter. And it was completely believable. And he, again, he didn't go, like, gray hair. He didn't go white hair. He didn't go blonde. He looked exactly like himself, a fit, older, 50-year-old something man who has a teenage marriable age daughter. And it was completely fine. It was like, yeah, I believe this. This looks completely normal to me.
Right. And it's, well, let's keep in mind that in Bhoomi, Sanjay Dutt, who is what, like 7 or 8 years older than Salman, was playing father to Aditi Rao Haddari, like, who is, I think, in her late 30s.
Nothing wrong with that.
It just makes sense. And it's like, Salman, you are closer to Sanjay than you are to Sushant Singh Rajput.
Right.
It's time to start acting like. I've respected that Sanjay has played dads to adult daughters like for the last 10 years. It's time to embrace that
again. I think with Salman conversations, we always come back to ego. We always come back to his off-screen persona dictating his on-screen choices
and a bunch of enablers around him
I get a lot of shit for picking on Salman, but people have to understand that the reason why this makes for such a good conversation is because we do like him as an actor. He does. I mean, I know people shit on him, his acting ability too, but he is a good actor. He does have mad skills. It's just sad I'm speaking for you, but for me personally, I feel like when it's being wasted is when I get more upset. Like, let's write off Sushant Singh Rajput today because he hasn't had a string of hits. I'm okay with that because I haven't seen anything from that kid that I could defend or say, oh, we're missing out on so much if he doesn't make any more movies. But with Salman, we are. If he doesn't make good movies, there is a well of talent there that's getting not used, which is a lot sadder than someone just not being in the industry. So I think we can wrap it up now, Kathy.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, Two Blade over Little Boy, as an adaptation, as an on its own, I guess, right?
Yeah, definitely.
But if you do want some Roman Catholic, you know, moral compass teachings, listen to this episode and watch the movie and compare the notes with Kathy's own religious quotes. That was interesting, by the way. I don't think we've ever had that on the show before.
I came prepped with Bible quotes. Probably not going
to
happen.
I feel bad for not having like Gandhi quotes available to me. I feel like I haven't represented. But thank you so much.
Just watch Tube Light. That's where you get your...
Yeah,
your
exactly. Point. Or, side note, watch the 2006 Lagira Homunnabai, which also features some Gandhiisms there.
And Sanjay Dutt.
And Sanjay Dutt. Oh, look at that. It all connects. Kathy, you did write a review on accessbollywood.com for Tube Light. So yes. I direct people to read that review. It is... I read a lot of reviews of Tube Light when it first came out, and it when everyone was just like, this is the crappiest thing in the world, I was kind of very smug. Because, again, because of the show we did initially, and I'm like, see, I was right. This does suck. But then, Kathy, your review is very nuanced. It's very...
Well, thank you.
Calling the good, calling the bad. So I really encourage people to read that review of Tube Light, especially for people that didn't like Tube Light or wrote it off as, oh, well, it sucked. I'm not going to watch it anymore. Read Kathy's review. I think that will either turn you around or at least give Tube Light a chance. It is on, I believe, Amazon?
I think it's Amazon in Canada.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's. I mean, it's worth checking out. I do think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, and again, like I said, the direction, the story, the way that everything plays out, not disappointing at all. Like I said, Kabir Khan's a great director, and this movie, because of the source material and what he had to do with it, I think is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Thank you everyone for listening, Kathy. Why don't you let people know where they can get a hold of you and read your other reviews on the internet as well?
You can find me at accessbollywood.com, and I am on Twitter at Kathy F. Gibson.
Well, wasn't that fun, folks? It definitely was fun for us making that show, so we hope you guys had fun listening. Definitely check out Kathy's website, accessbollywood.com. You're going to find the latest Bollywood movie reviews, as well as news for when those movies become available on streaming. To keep listening to this show, check us out on Apple Podcasts or at our home on Audioboom. Subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, or you can even listen to us on any other podcasting app such as Stitcher, Google Play Music. We're actually even on Spotify now. If you want to listen directly on your web browser, you want to download MP3, visit my website at blankpagebeatdown.com. If you like what you heard and you want to have your review read on the show as well, keep in mind I will read negative reviews as well, because that's just a thing. Even if you have negative review, I always find that you learn more and you get to kind of improve yourself better when you have people critiquing you in a negative or you know, constructive way. So feel free to leave any kind of review on Apple Podcasts that I will read out on the show. You can follow the show directly on SplitScreen_pod on Twitter. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well, at The Shah Shahid. It's also the best place to get in touch with me to have any conversation movie related, or if you even want to be a guest on the show. Once again, thank you so much for listening. For the Split Screen Podcast, my name is Shah Shahid.